Don't you think Rick would pull her aside at some point and go, Rosita, what's going on?
Why being such a fucking asshole lately? What's your deal?
Hey, can you do me a favor and not be a huge dickhole? Lower-
A big spummy dickhole about every fucking single goddamn thing we do? Could you try that?
Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. I'm Dean, I'm joined by Matthew, and today we are going to be talking about The Walking Dead, Best New Friends. It's time. It's the second episode of this half of the season, and I'm looking forward to getting after it today with my good friend Matthew Anderson. How are you doing this fine evening, sir?
Quite well, sipping red wine.
In between us talking about Duce and the West Coast Rap All-Stars before the show here.
All these pertinent Walking Dead topics.
Yeah, you guys are missing out because you're not in the live chat, right? So you didn't hear all of our terrible Italian accents in us.
Which I refuse to do now. That is only for the live people.
In us repping our fucking 1989 rap knowledge.
Still cool.
It's the best. It's never been better. It was never better than it was then. That's what old guys say. So that's what I'm going to say. Right? Easy E, Dre, they're the best. Nobody's better. Forget it. You're done. You all suck compared to those guys.
Music stopped. That's it. It's the end of culture.
The music died. Yeah. Rap is terrible compared to the fucking mid-90s. Early 90s, late 80s. Anyway.
It's fucking old over here.
Sorry. Go ahead. Oh, DMX. Go ahead. Great. Cool. I'm glad you can curl. Awesome. You suck compared to Snoop Dogg. Sorry. I said it. Don't shoot me. So here's what we're doing. We're going to talk about this shit. It's going to be badass. I'm going to have a lot of fun. And if this is your first time, we're going to spoil the episode. So please note that this is not a like a high-level review show that doesn't really say anything. This is a balls-deep, scene-by-scene. We're going to spoil it. We're going to give you our opinions. We're going to say bad words. We're going to probably do some listener comments.
Yeah. It's all accurate. I can't knock it.
We should probably tell these people at the chat, though, since we mentioned it and never really directed their attention there. Why don't you do that real quick?
If
you know how, like where to direct people.
Well, I would direct those people to Mixlr, MIXLR.com/LSG-media. That's where we do not just this fucking podcast, but all of them. We do all of our podcasts live now. And you can check that out on our Facebook page or just go to LibertyStreetGeek.net and you can see all of our announcements, our schedule there. And literally, I think we started out only doing a handful or maybe the six science fiction film podcast, but we do all of them. Stranger Things, Game of Thrones, Westworld. We do every podcast live now. So you can always hop in and correct us when we screw up. So yeah, take advantage.
Word. All right, Matt. New best friends. Unless I'm going to say it.
Would you like to know about my new best friend?
It just sounds corny.
Bunch of weird cult ass garbage people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fucking king of the trash heap, or queen, as it were.
Patty Smith of the Trash Warriors is how I think of her.
Yeah, I guess. She's doing something there. What are your thoughts on this week's episode?
On the whole, I'm intrigued. I like this new introduction of the trash characters, and not because I'm like, what? I mean, that's what I'm calling them. That's what they fucking
are. I love them so much, I call them trash.
They're fucking trash people. And this is one of the few groups where I'm not intrigued by them being introduced because I'm like, wow, look at them. They're so like badass and cool. I'm more like, man, this might be something that bites you in the ass in the future. Like, I'm not sure if you should trust these people. My whole takeaway from this episode is war makes for strange bedfellows. I'm like, and you can see it on the face of everybody else in Rick's party when they're there. Rick is the one that's like, oh man, they got the numbers. These people look intense. They've been surviving for a long time out here. Very, you know, rough, hardened people. But everybody else is going, they're fucking weird as shit. Like this weird cult of people who knows what their actual agenda is. But Rick just sees the numbers, the ferocity, and the guns, and thinks, you know, an allyship can be had. You know, thinks that surely the Soviet Union will always be an ally, and after World War II, they'll never cause a problem. Basically, it's what I'm seeing in this episode. That is intriguing to me. I like seeing our characters make good decisions that are interesting and them get one over on the bad guys. But sometimes I almost like seeing, wow, this could benefit you in a way, but this might be, in the long run, a bad decision. That's interesting and I don't know, nuance as well. I kind of like that. I like that Rick might be fucking up a little bit again, but hopefully he's able to catch himself before the effects really bite them in the ass. But these people are fucking intriguingly weird, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like they, like, I would imagine that they were on a bus and they were going to some sort of convention. They were on a bus going to a convention, right? Be it, I don't know, some sort
furries.
Of...
Furries. Let's just go
No, I don't know about just, furries. Maybe they were going to a, maybe they went to like a sci-fi convention or something.
And they, just and a bunch of fucking weirdos watching going, too much Trek.
They're going to fucking Mad Max Con. And then, yeah, and then all of a sudden they got waylaid by dirty fucking walkers or biters. And they fucking had to set up in the trash heaps. And they're like, let's just stay in character. Maybe they were LARPing, right? That whole time they were LARPing. And they thought that these guys were like the new characters that were going to be in their game. And they were like, Rick, you got to do this and do fucking wacky hand signals that look just like the other hand signals.
Take him to the up-up.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. But anyway, that's kind of what I was thinking. So, but yeah, I what? So you like this overall? I mean, you kind of were intrigued by these peeps.
I do, and I did like seeing. I think it was about time we saw Carol and Daryl share a scene together. I think that's overdue, and I enjoyed that overall. Even though I'm still a little bothered by fucking the leftovers of Gran Torino, Carol. She's still doing that. Still doing that thing, but I can't wait to get to that scene. I think Daryl's the most interesting part of that whole interaction.
Interesting. So, yeah, overall, man. So I'm watching this episode, and I keep doing this thing where I'm trying to remove myself from being corrupted by my general feeling towards The Walking Dead. We talked about this last week.
Yeah,
and I find myself still trying to do it for sake of the show. For sake of trying to remain objective as much as possible, given where the characters are and what they have to do and what kind of stories can they tell to get out of where they are. And here's what I am going to say. I thought it was cool that they found a new group. I thought it was cool that these guys hung out in a fucking huge trash thing. I don't care about that. That strikes me as a place where people could hide, disappear, whatever, maybe be defensible in. I'm not sure. Most people don't go looking through piles and piles of trash to scavenge when they have perfectly good other places, which most likely have a bunch of dead people in them.
And I can imagine that being good terrain for tripping up zombies. It's not something they could easily get over.
Yeah, they probably don't wander around. Yeah, it's probably really hard to get for them to go anywhere near it. There's so many barriers that are set up for them. It's not like they have one wall they can just pile on by the thousands. They might not even be attracted. They probably don't even know people are in there. But all that logistical stuff aside, I actually liked this scene with Rick going there. I didn't love the stuff with like their fucking silly language. Like, are you not using articles or like pronouns or like what? Why are you talking like weirdos? So that was like funky. I didn't know why they were talking like odd people. It's not like, I mean, it's only been a couple of years. I mean, I would imagine people don't start talking like that. I don't know why they would talk like that.
I think like, it was Mike Hildre that made the joke on the Facebook page of like, oh, good thing to know the English language only has a shelf life of 3 years in the apocalypse
before it
deteriorates.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, you know, I don't, some of the specifics I'm a little dicey on, but we'll talk about that. But I thought it's cool that they met this different group that's kind of weird and different, and it's in a weird location, and they made Rick sort of prove himself and stuff like that. And interesting watching Rick handle these people, considering the circumstances and the negotiations at the very tail end of this whole sequence. I want to talk about that. I'd like to get your feelings on Rick negotiating with these people in that particular way. So there's different stuff like that going on here. Of course, the stuff with Richard I want to talk about. He kind of disappointed me this week. We'll talk about Richard and like what he fucking was thinking. But plenty to do, plenty to talk about, and we might as well start working our way through the episode, and we'll go right to this open here, which, of course, is a scene involving folks from the kingdom. We have Diane, Jerry, Benjamin, Richard, Ezekiel, and, of course, Morgan. And they are all awaiting a transaction. And while they're waiting, Diane glances over her left shoulder. We get a zombie that was once a woman, presumably, walking towards them. And she shoots it down with an arrow. Good shot in the head. Says something about her sister had that dress. Good shot.
Yeah.
Don't think about it. And then
I really liked that extent. I like him just immediately being like, don't think about it. Like, that's about the only way you survive at this point.
Sure. And then, of course, the vehicles pull up, and we get Gavin's crew with this fucking jerk-off Jared. He's the worst character of all time. I can't stand this guy.
Oh, he's a piece of shit.
But Jared and Gavin,
is this not the crustiest, like, D team of the fucking saviors? Like, these guys are the dog shit at the fucking furthest back of the line. Like, ugh. They're just the worst all around.
Yeah, they're fucking annoying. They look shitty. And
so shitty.
It's just a tense situation where these guys come for a pickup. Gavin says it looks light. Ezekiel urges him to look again. And then he's like, oh, maybe it isn't. And I'm like, okay. And then, of course, Jared, he's got his total hair up his ass for Richard. And no guns for bad boys. You hit me first, prick. Back and forth they go. And they draw down on each other. And we get this tense moment where guns come out. Things get tense, and everyone's sort of standing pat. Where do we go from here, Gavin says. And we just see more of this. So what were some of your impressions on this scene overall?
I like it. I like this reminder for Ezekiel of just how arbitrary the saviors can be. Because to Gavin's credit, he still is the one for the, you know, this crew of the saviors trying to be like, all right, look, like, let's just fucking get this over. Let's just get our shit and get out of here. But I like that, you know, Ezekiel has to see just the arbitrary pushing toward violence. Like, I'm going to fucking, like, he didn't have to say anything. They got all their shit. It's over. The exchange is basically done. They just load it into their truck and leave. And he still had to press this into a fucking fight with Richard. And, you know, Richard, you could say, well, he escalated a little bit, too. He says, suck on it, you little shit, when he gives him the gun, which I fucking loved. But this is, like, you can't deny that at some point this is going to go bad. It already almost went bad the previous time. So I feel like even from this encounter alone, the right person could have words with Ezekiel and be like, look, we strike now ahead of time, or we're going to be striking back as a reaction to their own violence.
Yeah, so it's funny. My take on this was, I said to you, right, last episode, I said something dumb's going to happen. It's going to force Ezekiel.
Totally.
And as soon as we open on the scene, I said, here we fucking go. I was like, ugh, they're going to ham fist this. Ezekiel needs to see it firsthand bullshit. Which, so let me just say, the existence of the scene bothered me much more than the execution of the scene. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, we don't need to necessarily... It's not like we have to see blood fall onto Ezekiel's hands and him cry to the sky and then he changes his heart. Like, yeah, I agree. Like, that would be shitty. And the fact that the show...
It's just too easy. It's lazy.
It's too easy,
know?
Yeah.
But the scene is done well. I mean, it's tense. I'm tired. I'm tired of this fucking shit. And maybe the showrunners want me to be exhausted with these scenes, so when the comeuppance comes, it feels that much better. Maybe they're literally trying to beat the audience down so that we can feel the revenge as it courses through the savior's ranks, because I'm kind of getting tired of these moments of tension and bullying and there's nothing you can do about it and oh, bye-bye, bye-bye, and we're just going to kill you or something that has to stop and threats and all that shit. That's kind of just how I feel about it overall. But my hope was that something would occur. Like, I feel like you could inspire Ezekiel a couple different ways. Obviously, we know he's going to have to fight, but I like the idea of almost something underhanded. So I like the idea of Carol out on the lam, but I also don't know if that scene troubles me a little bit. But it would almost be cool if we did see some sort of underhanded activity to push Ezekiel's hand from his own people. because then it puts you in a bit of a moral dilemma, and it does, you do become culpable if you do something underhanded that gets somebody killed, that leads to war, that gets a bunch of people killed, so you can win. So that dynamic interests me. Like, I like the idea of somebody like Richard or somebody else doing something sketchy. Right. This is false flag shit, right? This is
fucking... And I like the idea of it, you know, of that kind of dubiousness coming outside of the saviors, that like other people are capable of matching them at that kind of like vindictiveness in a way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's something interesting there. And I also think it begs the question, at least ethically, like, is that the right call to do? Like, you think that. You, first of all, you think victory is assured and you're willing to sacrifice somebody for potential victory. I mean, that's pretty intense. You know, you're like, I'm going to kill you so we can live better, right? It's that whole adage. And then you can get into the utilitarian bullshit of needs of the many and the needs of the few shit again. But that's slippery slope shit there to me. You know how I feel about that, because it goes back to, democracy. This is a really harsh thing, but the way it was, the way it's said in argumentation is democracy is a posse with only one person objecting, right? So it's like majority rules in that situation, but that doesn't mean it's fucking right. So it's kind of funny, like, to see that he's willing to be like, well, if I kill one person, we can then be free. That's kind of how Richard thinks it's going to go. Like, that's his end game, which I know we're jumping way ahead, but I do like the idea of underhandedness being used, because I just think it's good storytelling. And it makes your good guy team morally culpable. And that's what I want to see. I want to see blurred lines. I like that stuff. It's compelling to me.
And I do think we're going to come to that place as far as the alliances go. And I think that's what intrigues me about the garbage people, is that an alliance with them could be genuinely beneficial, and maybe for the both of you, but these do not come off like, you know, the Hilltop and especially the Kingdom are like, well, okay, this is an ally that you could have in war and also somebody you could trust and trade with and, you know, be around and kind of, you know, intermingle. But it's like these garbage people, it's like, nah, you wouldn't do that with them. Like, you already immediately have that feeling of like, you can't really trust them. And hell, they'll probably backstab you if they get the chance to get something out of it.
Who is this?
The garbage people.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha. The garbage pail kids.
With their fucking creepy Romulan king.
Yes. Those Romulan bangs.
Anyway. Tensions mount up here, and did you catch, first of all, I love the way Morgan parries the strike with a stick. That was pretty
good. Yeah, dude, when he whacks his hand down with that stick,
It's a great, really cool, like, martial arts parry. And then he gets the stick taken away. You can see Morgan getting revved up for battle, and Benjamin, like, sweeps the guy. And when you watch it carefully, the other end of his stick is what clips Morgan's ear. It's kind of cool.
Totally. Yeah,
I like that.
Benjamin.
I thought that was cool choreography. I thought it was cool that Benjamin's move actually injured Morgan. I thought that was realistic given his lack of skill and the situation as it was playing out.
Me too. And I like, you know, I also like it. It goes literally unsaid because Morgan doesn't bring up like, oh, you hit me or anything like that. He just, you know, carries through, like, you know, and even later on, like, King Ezekiel's like, oh, you did good, Benjamin. You did good with your stick. I didn't notice that you fucking cracked Morgan on the side of the eye socket through that movement. But I like that Morgan didn't pull a bunch of attention to it. He just was like, he's a fucking kid learning.
Is Jared the worst person ever?
I mean, pretty much.
He's so annoying.
He's pretty, like, he looks like a fucking, like, I was the bass player in a grunge band that didn't make it, and I'm going to take it out on everyone forever.
Here's my dream. My dream is that Jared and Dwight fight till the death, and the winner fights Shiva. Can we make that happen? Can that be a reality?
I'd pay. Please. I'd pay pay-per-view for that.
In the chat, Karen's saying serious symbolism here. Perhaps the use of the stick to accidentally injure him. Of course, the stick being taken away, can have my stick back. He takes it away from him. There's been a lot of discussion online about that very thing.
Yeah. And I do like, I mean, yeah, it's like messy ass warfare. Everybody involved, even Richard, as much as he's willing to be underhanded in a way to make a first strike happen and initiate this kind of war or whatever, it's still, you can tell he has that mindset of like, if we all just unite and we're just great and everything's awesome, we'll have this perfect, like, you know, totally unified force that just sweeps through with glorious victory. And it's like, nah, dude, war's fucking messy. Like, you're going to lose people. You're going to end up hurting each other on accident. Like, things go wrong. And
yeah.
It's a nice little tight summary of that.
That was my take on it, too, that you, in thinking you're doing a good thing, hurt people around you, right?
Exactly.
And then, of course, Karen Lomas in the chat bringing up the idea that Stick's gone, so is Morgan's beliefs. That could be part of it, too, for sure. There's a lot of mixed things going on here. But Benjamin and Morgan have a little bit of a talk. He tells him to go to the infirmary. Ezekiel gives Benjamin a bit of a dressing down. He's like, knowing how to fight doesn't mean you have to seek it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good line.
And then Daryl comes down and talks to Morgan. And he said, hey, where'd you go in them trucks?
Where'd y'all go in them trucks?
You went to see them, right? Part of your deal. What the hell is wrong with you? You're bleeding. They did that to you. You know what they are. You know, if Carol were here, if she saw that and knew about the Benjamin.
Well, hey, don't fucking lavish too much praise on Daryl. Fucking Jesus.
There's a lot of talky talk here from Daryl, and this is essentially just this moment is justifying the end when he lies to Carol. That's why this is here, because because if he doesn't say it, you know, if he doesn't say it here, and this is a bit of a fault of the show, at least in my opinion, if he doesn't say it here, I think a lot of people are going, why the fuck is he lying to Carol?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You're not going to know exactly. I don't think. I think the average viewer is like, why is he lying to Carol? Unless they pay attention to this episode and watch this scene.
Yeah.
And where explicitly states, if she knew, she'd be leading us right to him. I mean, he explicitly states it here. I just thought it was kind of shitty dialogue. But, you know.
It's very much a means to an end dialogue.
That's no, like, subtext or anything. But what do you think about him outside of that, without me being a dickhead about it? What do you think about him coming at Morgan like this?
Coming at Morgan? Well, I buy it as far as
what
him.
What the hell's
like,
wrong with you? That's coming at him, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think he would come at Morgan like that over anybody else because he knows Morgan, because he's of, you know, the same people. And I also buy that he would have a particularly heated animosity towards the Saviors being fucking captured and tortured by them for so long. I'm like, these are all aspects of Daryl's character that I'm buying at this point, that he would be like, fuck that. What are you still dealing with them? And I think also you could imagine that he living in this place for a little while, probably only a day or two at this point, but he's already seen the scope of where they're living and the amount of people that are there and the weaponry they have. And he's even going, fuck, you guys are under their thumb. You haven't thought about rebelling. Like, we fucking can't. Like, we have no guns. They stripped us of that. We have a fucking skeleton crew keeping us alive. And you fucking cushy fucks can't fight back. Like, I could imagine him having that feeling, that thought of, like, really? You're going to go out there and do your shady little dealings with them so they don't hurt you?
Yeah, do you think that's just what it is? I mean, we've discussed this many a times that Daryl got no creep to him.
So, he don't got no creep. He ain't no wonder. He ain't no Littlefinger.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I think. Like, I think he's just I just don't see him being able to properly execute this idea. And apparently, he learned nothing from watching Glenn get fisheye souped by. What do you want me to do out there? Punch one of them, and then this guy gets his head dove in with a fucking Louisville, like you did, asshole. That's what Morgan should have said. Yeah, I'll go out there, Mr. Tough Guy. Oh, you ain't gonna touch. You ain't gonna hold me down. You don't even know me, Jack. You ain't gonna bully me. You ain't gonna buffalo me. And then your buddy gets his fucking head.
Oh, my boy.
Yeah. Fucking nitwit. I think Morgan did just fine. Shut your goddamn mouth, Daryl.
Yeah. No, we can never forget that aspect of Daryl. Of the man has no underhandedness, for better or for worse.
Yeah, that's right. At least he's consistent. So,
yeah, totally.
Daryl snorts and walks away. I think I put in my notes.
I'm going to shoot a squirrel out of a tree.
Richard practices terribly with a bow, by the way. He should stay away from bows.
Man, he sucks hard. Well, I mean, I think he's doing the right thing. He's got a lot of hours of practice ahead.
Throw some axes, throw knives, throw fucking rocks, dude.
Throw axes? That's got to be 50 times harder.
I know. How about a fucking bow? He'd be more deadly with a rock, I bet. He's big and rangy.
He should check out slingshots, that's for sure.
I bet he'd be a good fucking pitcher. He's big and rangy. Probably got a good fastball.
Could make a fucking goose explode and fly by home plate.
So anyway, Richard hands Daryl a crossbow. Why? Daryl says. Because we want the same things. I need your help. And opening credits. And then, of course, Richard breaks it down for Daryl. We need to hit them to keep our people safe. This preemptive strike thing. This comes up sometimes, doesn't it, in this TV show?
Oh, yeah.
If you look at this, this is
the path we see Rick go down just a little while ago.
We've seen this from everybody.
A
bunch of different leaders have done this, and maybe that's why they became leaders. Now, maybe not effective ones, but if there's one thing that seems to exist in all of them is that they have to be decisive and take action, right? The governor fucking sure did.
That's for sure.
and Shane did, and Rick did, and they've all had to take action, maybe to the ruin of others, but it's... Yeah.
I think that's, you know, that's one thing that's also always so easily said by your fucking Monday morning quarterbacks of like, oh, well, you shouldn't have done that thing because that ended up bad. I'm like, yeah, certainly easy through retrospect. Like, if you're the one taking on the burden of, well, now I have to make a choice to do this or do this, and the consequences of either are totally fucking unforeseen. Like, we're just going to have to roll with one. And yeah, you could pick something and it's a fucking disaster, but still a lot of times a choice is better. Action is better than inaction.
It's true. It's funny. I'm going to come at that from two different ways. I feel like a lot of times decisive action is imperative, right? But at the same time, I think it's important to note that you don't want to fall into a false dichotomy or a false choice, totally. Right? You don't want to be like, it's either A or fucking B. It's A or B.
Yeah.
Right?
There are no other options. Nothing
else.
It's
not like we're going to die tomorrow or we attack the saviors. Because it's kind of like these guys are getting to that desperate point. Like the Richards and the Rositas are getting to the like, we need to go and do this thing now. Which is funny because you can't just rush into this kind of thing. You can't just rush into, we're going to attack the saviors. They're not, I mean, Jesus Christ, look what happened to last time. It cost you lives. You attacked that satellite complex without a lot of thought. It was like, okay, we're going to starve or we're going to kill all these people and we need to kill all these people. And then they were decisive and they took action and, you know, put them in this position. But that might not even be true. It's possible that they fucking had an encounter with the saviors 2 weeks later. It's not if and, you know, there's nothing saying that it wouldn't have transpired between them, the groups at some point without that satellite station.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think if Rick and them had said, fuck you to Gregory and all this, we're not going to put our asses on the line for your battle, you know, basically Ezekiel'd them like he did to them and just gone about their business within a handful of months tops, they would have had contact with the saviors. You know, a group of that size going out on the kind of long-ranging patrols they went on, they're going to find him. Like, they're going to find you.
Right. So he explains that the saviors ride this road. I do like this little trip they go on. I thought this was kind of cool. I like Daryl walking around with this guy. But I'm not surprised that Daryl didn't stay in any confined space for too long because I just don't think he shines there. That's one thing we've never seen out of the Daryl character, right? He's always out on patrol or out on his bike or not here or not at the prison or not at this complex or not at Alexandria or out in the woods or, oh, he's going to stay in Alexandria. Nope. He fucking leaves. He's out in the woods again. You know, like they never seem to be overly interested in using him in those capacities. So that's what they use the other characters for. Like Morgan might build a relationship with this kid and be over here, but that's really not going to be Daryl's forte. At least that's how it seems to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think he's always been that way. He's always been a man of the land, out tracking in the woods.
So Richard suggests that they just hit them when they drive up. Hit them with guns, fire, and guns. Fire because it needs to look bad. So, holy shit, he's talking about attacking them today, like this afternoon.
Like right now. Like next car comes by.
hey, Richard, are you sure about this?
You know, that's the thing about his plan. There's a lot that I actually like here. I like that we finally reveal that, okay, I have this trailer out here with all these guns and all this shit set up.
As that's a amazing, fucking, by the way.
As a false flag. I have set this up so that I can attack them. Another patrol will find this, you know, ambush and find their, you know, the result of their dead friends. They will be able to spread out, find that trailer, and it will look like somebody from the kingdom or some resistance. The part where I go, well, damn, dude, I don't really think you even have to do this, is where he's like, well, and we have to, of course, make it look like it was Carol. And I'm like, do you? Like, I feel like you could attack them, set up, you know, it was a good idea to set up that trailer and make it look like a kingdom-sanctioned outpost. I'm like, that's fucking smart. I mean, if you want to be a fucking sneaky conspirator trying to ignite a war without your fucking leader's permission, I'm like, that's kind of a damn smart way of going about it. It's where he steps, it's like he feels like he needs Carol in order to move Ezekiel's hand. Whereas I'm more of in the thought of, like, if you get the saviors this angry by killing some of their people, and then there's just any evidence at all that it came from the kingdom, that's all you need. Like, that's going to be that. Like, they're going to come down hard on the kingdom, and the kingdom's going to have to react.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a weird, it's sort of a weird situation here where you are, you want to, his inspiration here, so here's Richard's thought process. Let's see if we can work our way through it. Okay.
Sure.
I want to motivate Ezekiel to take up this fight now that we've met Rick and that he wants to do this fight too. I'm starting to see the writing on the wall. Richard starts to feel like he can get out from under the boot here, right?
Totally.
However, Richard denied Rick that alliance. He said, we'll keep your boy safe here. We're not going to war. I'm just not risking what I have here for some guy I barely know because this guy annoys you and does terrible things to you. We don't see that impact here. We meet him outside our walls. That's how it's been. It's been good. He does not set foot in our kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, I love that line from the last episode where Ezekiel's like, it's an uneasy peace, I know, but it's peace. Mm-hmm. And that's worth enough to me, basically.
So Richard, who knows Ezekiel pretty well, decides, I need to motivate Ezekiel to take action. So I am going to attempt to have someone he cares about killed.
That is it. He thinks it has to be, I guess, through Richard's, and, you know, maybe he does know Ezekiel very well. Like, he's somebody who's been there from the beginning and has seen his decision-making process. Maybe, and I mean, in a way, we have kind of already seen this evidence. Like, Ezekiel is makes decisions on a one-to-one individual basis. Like, he's going out and doing all this stuff for Carol, even though she has already left. He's still, like, doing patrols for her to take out the undead nearby, and then even still looking out for her, bringing them food, like very much like investing resources into the welfare of one person. And so maybe Richard is right, as awful as it is, that to force his hand, it would have to be a very personal, close thing like this.
Right. Now, where do you think that puts Richard in a morally culpable way? Like, like, that's such a...
like, on a spectrum of good to bad? I mean, it's just, like, where he lands. Like,
what is he doing here, man?
I mean, this is a pretty fucking dark plan. I wouldn't throw Richard entirely under the bus as, like, oh, he's a monster. But I'm like, this is pretty fucking shitty, man. It's not a good thing to conspire to ignite a war, you know, to kill a couple saviors to maybe get that to happen. I'm like, that's fine. Like, that's... whatever you want to, you know, this is the enemy as far as it goes at this point. But
now,
the fact
if
that
you want to, go ahead. I'm sorry. The fact that he what?
Well, the fact that he's trying to get, you know, I guess you could call Carol like a neutral party at this point because she's not really aligning herself with the kingdom anymore. She's not really, you know, a part of any group. But you're still willing to get somebody who's only real, you know, and Richard's weird kind of psychological hoop jump of a justification for this is, oh, well, she wanted to go out on her own, and going out on your own is just a death sentence anyways, and she's going to die at some point, so this is fine. Like, I'm just doing what's going to come naturally anyways. I'm just hurrying it along.
Sure.
And that's some bullshit, for one. Like, that's some bullshit. Because also, all that Carol ever wanted, I could even understand if somebody who was exiled from the kingdom for being a piece of shit was living kind of nearby, and you wanted to frame that person of like, fuck it, this person was a criminal that we exiled for, you know, dubious activities, and now they're still kind of nearby. I can frame them via their association with us to get the kingdom involved in this war. That'd be one thing. But like Carol's whole intention of this was like, I do not want to be a part of you people's politics. I do not want to be a part of communities and getting, you know, all World War One fucking sucked into treaties, into warfare kind of bullshit and have to kill people because I, you know, need to protect others. I just want to be on my own. I want to be left alone. Like, that's all she's ever wanted. And now he's going to have her framed and murdered to try and ignite a war is like some mean shit. She just wanted to be Switzerland, all right?
So Mickey in the chat said something that I was going to bring up, and I will just say what he says. He goes, he's desperate because he's on the hit list. Now, that, in my opinion, is something an astute watcher picks up on, like Mickey. He goes, oh,
totally, yeah.
I see. He's desperate. He's on the hit list. Right. I agree with that statement, Mickey, but here's what I want. I want that to be implicit in watching the program to sort of drag Richard through the mud a little bit.
Yeah.
And muddy because he's scared. He's scared
I think there's
that
enough
if
there.
He,
yeah.
He's scared that if he makes a hit on these guys, like you said, what if he just kills all these guys, right? Because if he does that and then he goes home and he goes, well, that's going to fucking shake the hornet's nest. He might be the fucking guy that gets stung, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. He definitely, even this episode reinforced the whole, hey, anything bad goes, you know, anything bad happens, by the way, you're the first dude on the chopping block. Like you, Gavin said that to him again. He's like, you're the guy. Like if anybody's getting the bat first, it's you.
Right.
So he is the one.
I also feel like there's probably evidence in and or around that area. Like if you open up on those guys there, they're probably going to scour that area and find your little weapons cache, and they might find evidence of who you are. I would assume you'd have to get rid of that shit. Didn't you have like a picture of a kid, a camper, a backpack with a name on it and shit?
Oh, like, fuck, I don't remember.
Like he's got to be careful of shit like that. But like that's one of the reasons he's going to frame somebody else if he gets into it with these guys, because he kills these saviors.
He's the first guy they go to.
The savior's going to go there and they're going to fucking demand a sacrifice, and it might be him. And he can't. And that's cool when you talk about it and you think about it. Do you feel like that's implicit in this?
I think that, you know, talking through it, I think that is the reason. That is the thing in Richard's mind of I can't just start the conflict. There has to be somebody culpable. Like I have to frame a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to make it look like someone else started the conflict, because if a conflict starts and I think it's just a conflict from the kingdom, he'll be the first one to die. Even if it means all out war against the kingdom, they'll still want his ass first.
I think
there's enough evidence for that.
And the more we talk about this, the more Richard's motivation becomes clear. Because on the one hand, I could say, Richard, you fucking idiot. Why don't you share with the group at the kingdom, that you have all this stuff, all these guns, this possibility, and then you can mount up and then you can get some people behind you and get something going and blah, blah, blah. But then he doesn't have the blessing of the king. So that's a problem. He's not sure how to powder keg this thing without getting himself in trouble. And he knows that each day that goes by, he moves closer to the guillotine. Because if this keeps going the way it does, if I'm Richard, stay home on the runs. Don't go.
Totally.
Disappear. Totally. Stop. Stay in the kingdom. They don't go in the kingdom. Leave that shit alone and work your magic from inside. But then again, that's not very cinematic, is it? We have a fucking TV show to make interesting, so...
Well, and I can see the whole, like, he's a higher, you know, ranking one of, you know, Ezekiel's soldiers, and it would be, I don't know, bitchly for him to just stay home and not go out. Like, he's like, I don't want to go. Like, I mean, I could see him being like, no, it's like my duty or whatever, but.
Yeah.
But still, on the whole, I would be like, man, that guy, I would go to, if I were him, I would go to Ezekiel and be like, dude, that guy's got it out for me. It's just only going to go bad. Like, why not, like, just let Morgan take my spot?
Yeah, you'd think Ezekiel would have that.
Right. Yeah,
I feel like Ezekiel would be like, all right, this is going the wrong way. It's going to break bad. So you stay home from now on. No more. No more runs with you, bitch.
Totally.
Mando Tori in the chat saying, I think the Savior stated they wanted him there for exchanges a few eps back. So I guess that's possible.
Oh.
But anyway, they get into the situation. So all that aside, we can maybe empathize with Richard a little bit, right? If we want to be if we want to be realistic, we can empathize. I'm not saying we can agree, or that we would even, or that we would even side with Richard given the circumstances if we were in them. But we can understand a little bit of where he's coming from, as he is number one on the hit list should things go tits up.
Yeah, totally.
Now, even with that benefit of the doubt, it's going to be hard for me to justify this at this point. Once he realizes that Carol is important to Daryl, that's where you have to say, okay, we need a different plan. I don't know why he's so dogged on this plan. Once it's clear that this person means something to your king's guest, you have to call it off. You're the second in command, right?
Yeah.
You got to call this off.
You
got to regroup.
Go through with it.
Yeah, he's not going to go through with it. You got to regroup. You got to figure something different out. This guy might, you don't know Daryl. He might walk right back up to Ezekiel and go, this fucking cocksucker, guess what he was doing?
True. Or he might just kill you on the spot.
Sure.
Like, this is just some wild man. Like, yeah. You don't know him at all. Like, there was a part of me that actually wondered if he was, like, going to be telling him, like, yeah, well, you know, her name was Carol, but I still think we should. And then fucking Daryl just, like, whips up his crossbow and puts one through his eye. Like, I honestly thought for a second that might happen.
Yeah. It's a possibility,
like, he
might
right? fucking do it.
But no, he gets on top of him and he's giving him a nice left-right exchange. I think if I want to be real though, I think Richard probably can win this fight. I know that's gonna people. I know I'm down on Daryl, but Richard's a big fucking dude. Daryl's scrappy as fuck though. I'll give him that. But I do like this. I do like this little battle they get into, but it's at this point where you go, oh, she matters to you. I apologize. You're my new comrade. Like, okay, we'll think of something totally. Else.
It just goes, and I think that just goes to show how fucking desperate he is. Like, he has latched on to this plan. I don't think he has a backup scapegoat. There's nobody else. You know, you can alter the plan as far as tactics and strategy, but he doesn't have his sweet scapegoat out there he can pin everything on other than her.
Here's what I think should happen. I think that Richard should. Well, we'll get to that because let's talk about these great two final quotes in this little exchange. I would die for the kingdom, Richard says. And Daryl says, why don't you?
Ooh.
I love that. Because
That's some shit.
I think that says a lot. I think if Richard wants freedom for his people, if Richard wants to be the knight, the champion, put your fucking money where your mouth is. Next time Jared mouths off to you, put a buck knife through his fucking eye. And then you'll be dead. And then Ezekiel will go to war.
There you go.
Right?
There you go. Or you carry out your plan, but with no scapegoat, you let them come back to you. You start this battle, and it ends however it ends.
Yeah. But I think that's Daryl's point here. And there's a lot of wisdom in that hillbilly when he just says, why don't you? And that's what he's saying. If you want to inspire Ezekiel so much, then go die for him.
Yeah. And like what Karen and Hunter are talking about in the chat also, just his whole line of how far, like I love how far he goes to point out that like Carol's not just somebody to me, not just somebody I happen to know or some acquaintance. He's saying if anything happens to her from this point on, if she so much as struck by lightning or catches a fever, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Right.
I'm going to blame you.
Right.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, that means if Carol dies in combat, the first thing I do is turn and shoot Daryl.
Pretty much. Thanks. Like, oh, hey, fuck, he's coming for me.
Hey, thanks for the heads up.
Shit.
Anyway. Hey, Daryl, you said you were going to kill me. Thanks. Since Carol's dead, you're dead. Anyway, I was just playing. But yeah, I do like that little final exchange between these guys is awesome.
Oh, totally. No,
and you get that cool shot of that coach getting held up, and it's on that. Yeah,
yes.
It's a great shot.
They had that total fucking like highway robbers aesthetic. I did it.
Yeah, it's cool. Let's talk about the trash people.
Trash people. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Walking Dead beyond Garbage Dome.
One man enter, one man leave from the up-up.
From the up-up.
So
I don't know about you. I actually liked this introduction of this long, like, way overhead shot of just this fucking junkyard. And then their doors open up and they all just file in like fucking zombies. Like, this is the most ritualistic cult-like people we've seen yet. I remember when we kept thinking that maybe the Terminus people were gonna be like this, but they totally weren't. They were very much like any other, you know, group of survivors, but they just decided very like strangely or in a strangely logically yet illogic manner, we're gonna be cannibals, fuck it. And like, they just did that, but otherwise they were like just totally matter of fact about it. The silence of these people and the way they move, the way they dread, like, this is the first like post-apocalypse cult I feel like we've seen.
Yeah.
And I liked this bizarre introduction of it, man. I kind of dug it.
I dug this too, actually. I really liked this moment. I like Rick's extreme confidence, his smile.
Totally.
He's so confident. I love it. I love his attitude here. But we meet Tamiel and Brienne. Weird fucking names. Like, is this Lord of the Rings? Like,
this is welcome to the fucking altar of the high elves.
Yeah, right.
Ugh. But no, I love the uniform look of just total confusion and bewilderment on everybody else's face, and Rick is the one like, yeah, all right, numbers,
crazy, crazy. So, are you a collective or does one lead? Jadis asks. We own your lives. You want to buy them back. Have anything? And then, of course, Rick asks to see Gabriel. So what do you think about this whole thing? What do you think about Jadis' stance, about how she claims that we own your lives? What do you think about this whole thing?
Well, I do think it's interesting that they talk and they barter in such an economic sense. Like, everything comes down to, you know, we take things and we don't bother. Like, and I take that philosophy, you know, this weirdly stated philosophy, to mean that we don't want to basically encounter any hassle, no conflict. We don't want to deal with that. We just want to get the shit we need. And if that means, you know, through some strange agreement between you guys or just through sneaking into places and stealing things in the night, so be it. We're just not going to have to fight people openly to get it. Like, that's why it's also interesting that Rick sees such an opportunity to get them to fight a battle for him. They seem so uninterested in anything other than the raw materials they want and what basic exchange they have to get for it.
I feel like three of these people get shot, the rest scatter. Like, they strike me as having no morale. I don't know what it is. I don't know what Rick sees in them other than maybe just, you know, a fucking human meat shield in front of his people, which I guess is fine. That's why he's like, yeah, you can have everything. Pfft.
Fuck it.
Fucking, yeah, you could, yeah, sure, take my pants, man. And then they all get fucking mowed down by Negan's assault rifles. He'll just take all his shit back from him, I guess. I don't know.
Fucking be bullet sponges.
Yeah. Get out the gone. Gone. Go ahead. And that's the end of these fucking chuckleheads. But they look like a bunch of homely shitheads with crappy rags.
They all have like long hair that's all fucking elven put back. They all have it.
It's
they
true.
All do.
It's so true. It's
weird.
This is a very comic book group to me.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
What bothers me about this is that Rick doesn't address it. And this is where like the meta shit pisses me off about these shows. Is that they lack the awareness because of the meta to actually say, like, why do you talk so weird? Like, any human would be like, why do you talk like this? And like, what are you talking about? Talk normal.
Why are you dressed like this?
Talk in your normal fucking voice. Why are you being a weirdo? I'm trying to make a deal with you. Do you want to live? Like, there's just not real dialogue here. Just like some fucking wayward fucking D&D party comes across. Wacky cult people.
The snake cult.
Yes. Fucking yes. God.
But I do honestly hope there's a scene later on where like what we haven't had in such a long time is like another like intimate quiet scene between just like Rick and Michonne where they could be like, but God, the way those people talk, like what the fuck was up with that? Like, I would love for that exchange to happen.
So they get talking and first of all, she says, we own your lives. I don't know what she means by that. Like, you, are we going to murder us? Like, what the fuck is your problem? You own our lives for what reason? How did we transgress against you? Because we took some shit from a guy who died that had a boathouse from shit you wanted? So you're going to kill us. Okay, you're fucking crazy. Number two, Rick explains that he gets after them about the saviors, right? He says, listen, first of all, Rick is great here. Where he says, they own our lives. If you kill us, you'll be taking something from them and they'll be coming looking. You have two options. Either to kill them, either they kill you or they own you. But there is a way out. Join us in fighting them. And Jadis just says, no.
And I liked that as well. For one, I really like it gave me more confidence in Rick than I've had recently, in the sense of, like, he's willing to be a tactician about this, and the way he approaches it is not just like, there's a real bad guy and he's going to come for you too if you don't help us stop. He actually uses the relationship he has with Negan already, of like the guy he hates so much and hates kowtowing to, he fesses up to being his property, being like, nah, actually, we're owned by this guy. We're owned by somebody else. He admits to being owned, and that's a larger force, a more powerful force, and that even he could take you out, and basically uses himself as the bargaining chip of being like, I am property, and if you take me out, if you steal from him, it's going to come down on you. Because he doesn't have the resources to come back at them with wrath anymore. So he uses the long way around to do that, to be like, no, I'm owned, and they'll come down on you.
I also loved it. Negan could take this group out on a fucking Sunday.
Oh my God, so easy.
With a ice cream cone in his hand, these fucking nerds. Like, fucking send four guys in there and just shoot them all dead. They're done. They suck. Go fuck yourself. Fucking get a couple excavators and just push their little shitty trash houses down. Oh, look, I live in a fucking trash house. You deserved it. Shitty trash houses down with my fucking bulldozers.
Just fucking Negan and Dwight and all his lieutenants in the fucking high school locker room. Like, let's get those nerds. Fucking roll.
School's out for summer. They're fucking running away. They come screaming around the corner of the locker room. They're running. It's slow motion. You see Negan like twirling the bat, chasing them down the hallway. They're fucking
cracking asses with a cricket bat.
Cracking axe. And their fucking elvish hairs flowing in the wind behind them.
Just the fucking dazed and confused slow motion, like, hair flipping around the elven ears, like,
yeah.
Fucking Jeffrey Dean Morgan's laughing face just paddling fucking dumpster nerds.
Yes, that'd be so bad.
Fuck, I want this now.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, he's wearing like fucking Chuck Taylors or something, and you see like Lucille down by his feet. Just
Dwight's wife
heads.
Just fucking under his arm, just laughing.
They pull Jadis out of a locker like 3 weeks later, beat to death. Fucking nerds, just stupid community. Go fuck yourself.
Fucking wedgieing one of them and throwing them into the fucking pit.
Shit.
That said, I still kind of like the garbage people.
I know. I'm being a bit hyperbolic.
Oh, fuck.
But
I do want to watch that now.
Yeah. Yeah, flowing elvish hand. You see it just get caught in a fist. A fingerless gloved fist.
Oh, my God. So good.
Well, here's the part where you should be concerned if you're Rick. You get this little situation with Gabriel. This little weird skirmish breaks out, and then Gabriel gets a knife on somebody.
Yeah.
So Gabriel takes out one of your like third in command, like with a knife. Probably not your warriors you're looking for. If the priest, who can't do shit in combat yet, I think we're going to see a new Gabriel coming soon, but he manages to like grab one of your people with a knife, Tamiel or whatever hell her name is.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. He got him on her.
I don't know, man. I feel like they probably could have just killed all these people.
Yeah.
You take out the glowering guy who looks like, I don't know, somebody from, I don't know.
Well, the other thing that like I was saying earlier, it strikes me about them is that even though they kind of just start piling on Rick and company here for a second, they do strike me as the people of, like, if they think there's any tangible, you know, benefit they can still eke out of the situation, that's what they're going to go for.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they didn't just kill them. They obviously outnumber them so much they could have killed them. But it's cool that they decided not to. They're like, and everybody shows some restraint here. This is different. Yeah. And how different
because also,
is Rick's
when you think
attitude?
About it,
it's so good.
What they don't, you know, they basically have no risk with their agreement because it's like, all right, we're going to send you shitheads on a scavenger hunt for us. Bring us shit back or else we give you nothing. And we have nothing to lose because if you don't come back because you get killed out there, well, that's no skin off our back. We don't have the problem of you anymore. Like, they're in the perfect position. So I think she realizes that, Jadis or whatever, of like, all right, maybe I can get something out of you. If not, then I don't lose anything either.
Yeah, it's possible. Or Rick shows up with guns and just kills them all.
Or that.
She doesn't know Rick well, but I guess she does now. I guess that's the whole point of this ritualistic moment they have where they climb up on the thing and they look around. Because, you know, she wants to take him to the up-up, right?
To the up-up.
Gabriel has a great moment here where he says the saviors have things, whatever you want. You know, he does that whole thing, and it's cool. I like Gabriel here. If you join us and beat them, you can have much of what's theirs. Fighting with us, you'll be rewarded more than you can imagine. And, that's when Gabriel's like, Rick can do anything. This group, they found me here so far from our home. What do you need? We will show you what we can do. So,
yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like Gabriel here.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I do like this actress. Pollyanna McIntosh is her name, who plays Jadis. I do think she's good in this. She's good weird.
You think she was born with that name?
I don't know.
Pollyanna McIntosh?
Hello, I'm Pollyanna McIntosh, movie star. I don't know.
Anyway, but... So, they try to treat Aaron's wounds, some silly hand signals. Rosita is just fucking annoying.
Rosita.
Her hotness does no longer outweighs her annoyance. You know when you get to that relationship with a girl? Your hotness outweighs the fact that as soon as I boogoosh, I'm like, ugh, I don't even want to be near you.
No, I just want to go watch TV by myself.
She's not that hot.
I mean, it's been since she's been introduced to the show, the 2 years? I mean, the honeymoon's over.
Honeymoon's over, Rosita. There's more fine women in the world. I bet Tamiel cleans up real good.
Oh, for sure.
Anyway.
Jadis, too.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like all these weird garbage people, give them a shower. Good
crazy movie stars are hot. It's weird.
Who knew?
Who knew these fucking actresses are good-looking people? I thought they only hired the fucking ugly ones.
You wipe off the grease paint, and they're good to go.
Oh, shit. But anyway.
But who would have thought that Father Gabriel, I have both my arms extended over the ever-plunging cliffside, and I can only say Father G or Rosita, I'm pretty much unhesitatingly dropping Rosita at this point. I'm like, fuck it. Like, you're really annoying, Scarface.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So sorry.
Sorry. See ya. So Michonne asks where they're taking Rick. They point up to the top of the trash pile. Rick looks around. And we get kind of a shitty green screen here, but
I'm not going to
ruin the episode, but it's a little early 2000 sci-fi to me.
Yeah, it was one of those, it's because the show can really pull off some pretty solid effects that the ones that are a little weaker stand out. You're like, oh, that looks, that's not as, you can do better. All right.
Yeah. And then we go to all of us here. Okay, so here's how she talks. Ready? All of us here sense the change. We take, we don't bother. Things grow harder. We open cans sometimes. Insides rotten. Time passed. Things are changing again. So maybe we change. Maybe. Need to know you're real with us. That you're worth it. This is where Rick goes, I'm sorry. Could you go back to the beginning and like fucking talk normal? That's what I mean. Like there's a meta sense to where you don't question the weird situation you're in because it's a TV show. But most normal people would be like, why are you... Look, I got to ask. Like, you got him in, like, come over. Like, come here. You walk, grab her by the elbow, walk to the side, be like, this fucking, like, outfit is just, like, a thing. Like, the fucking, like, the voices, like, the up-up. Like, I mean,
The change, zombies, what?
Like, when bullets start flying, you're cool, right?
You can handle your shit, right?
You goddamn weirdos. Anyway, she pushes Rook down into the pit. See ya, nerd. And Michonne and Rick can see each other through, like, a pipe. And then we get a fucking Mad Max post-apocalyptic zombie with armor.
Oh, I gotta say, man.
Love it.
I fucking love this Cenobite zombie, dude.
Me too. Me too.
This
I like
thing
him a
looks
lot.
Dope. It looks so cool.
It looks awesome.
I don't care
definitely
about...
forgot how to fight for a minute. Like,
oh, wait, Rick?
Yeah, he's falling all over the place and being dumb and using keyboards. He's like, ah, Rick, like, if this is one of those situations where if they wanted to make it a fast, fun scene, he'd just, like, shoot a, like, a pipe up through its mouth into its head and kill it in, like, 4 seconds.
Well, but, I gotta say, I actually kind of like that there's no useful garbage around. It's not like, oh, I found a crowbar laying nearby. I can beat it to death. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's a fucking sack of diapers. There's a fucking keyboard. Like, there's nothing. Like, I felt
it's all soft.
That's what I felt they raised those stakes pretty well of like, there's no weapons. Like, you got nothing to fight this fucking thing with.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And he looks fucking cool. I love the way
he
looks.
God, looks so gnarly.
Yeah.
I loved it. Loved it.
You know what's cool? Getting your hand impaled while you're in a fucking junkyard.
Gee, right?
Awesome.
Staff Infection City.
Hey, cool. Rick was a great leader until he died of MRSA. Now he's gone. So what a shitty way to die. After all this time, he gets MRSA.
Fucking Hep C from a Hellraiser zombie.
My fucking eyes turned yellow. But yeah, he defeats him with trash, right?
He trashes him, yeah.
Pulls some pillows and bags down on this thing. This shit must stink. Oof, and then he's like, yeah, let me pick up this little piece of whatever and just stab the shit out of it.
Okay, well, I think he, it's weird. Okay, so this is one of those moments where I'm like, all right, so we got to see like a fucking 3-minute extended shot of Glenn's head just getting fucking busted like a ripe mango and his fucking eyes falling out and his fucking sputtering final moments and blood hitting everybody in the face. And then Rick, like, I think cuts the head off a zombie and we're barely shown it and we really don't even understand how he killed it. Like, really? That's where you're gonna get conservative?
Well, you'll feel good okay. to know that. You'll feel good to know that at one point the punk zombie said, Jadis... as Rick was killing him, so there's that.
And she tearfully replied, Winslow.
From up on her trash pile so high. Okay.
Thank you. As Rick's just sawing his head off with a piece of glass.
Goodbye, Winslow. Now you go to the real up-up.
The final up-up for Winslow.
The final up-up you will reach soon. No, she would say, final up-up you reach soon. Not you will reach. That's it. Redundant.
Final up-up reach Winslow soon.
Yeah. Fuck.
Me not believe, Mad Max. There are no such thing, plane.
So, you know, we talked about a missed opportunity with the Bible and the verse. We know why that wasn't a thing. But boy, what a missed opportunity here with this badass music for Rick to turn around holding that thing's head up to her.
Swear to God, I thought that was going to happen. Because the way they shot it. Yes, like you don't see him stabbing. Like you see him like sawing and he's like got both hands down. And I'm like, he's going to turn around and show Jadis that thing's fucking head.
I want
to. Am I good enough now? And I'm going to be like, yeah, badass. And then, no. It's like, damn it. See, again, like, okay, let's show fucking Abraham get his melon squashed to pulp on the ground. Character we know and love. This fucking zombie. Oh, no, let's just zoom out. We don't want to see blood.
Are you not entertained? Come on, exactly. Holding that thing's head up.
Missed decapitation opportunity for sure.
I like the shot of her looking down on him in the trash pile. You see its head clearly off.
Oh, and, yeah, totally.
Yeah. He gets all fucked up though. He gets his leg cut. He gets his hand impaled. Cool music. Michonne actually coaches him through some of the fight to use the walls. You believe his nail.
I gotta say, man, the over-the-shoulder shot of him having to push against its forehead with the thing already stuck through his hand. That's It's dope. Like, this show still does the action right, man. I don't give a fuck what anybody says.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good.
So they got talking, guns, a lot. And then we fight your fight, Jada says. You know we will win, ? After we get have what's won. After we get half of what's won. So they negotiate back and forth. A third, we keep what we stole, half the jars, the ones we took. One time, this time, yes. Or bargain, no. Fucking Star Trek 3, this lady. Genesis. But Rick says yes and the guns. Rick says and the guns. Rick's lying. But that's fine. He's not going to give her all the guns. Get out of here. They're all dead. Yeah, we're confident these people know how to handle firearms. I mean, this is a thought process, right?
Well, and also, one thing that does bug me a little bit, I'm like, you guys seem to be not lacking in guns. Like, everybody, you know, go back and watch the ending of the previous episode. There's like 40 handguns trained on them. Like, they at least have sidearms, pretty much everybody.
Yeah, so and like, none in this moment.
Oh, of course. How fucking convenient, you garbage mongers.
They just hide them under various trashy things that people don't want anymore, like old desks and shit cushions and piss rugs. That must be what it is, right?
Hide all the Kalashnikovs under the diaper bags.
I like it. Anyway, quick, put the Glocks under the compost pile.
It's icky now. No one would want to touch it.
It'll still work because it's made by Austrians. So
efficient.
Fucking Kalashnikovs just chilling.
Like, that, there's a part of me that does wonder if, like, as soon as Rick and company have their backs turned, they're all, like, walking away, they all just pull out their fucking, like, Terminator 2 fucking friends in Mexico underground gigantic chamber full of guns. They're like, those fucking idiots, we just sent them off on a death mission. Glad they'd be rid of them.
That's funny.
Let's get out our fucking chain gun.
What do they eat in the trash heap? I mean, we're...
Good point.
What do they drink? Is there water?
A helicopter pad in the background of the shot of Rick's, like, the weird green screen shot where you just see trash for miles. The helicopter pad looks like solar panels.
No fucking way these people know how to use helicopters.
I know. I'm just at a weird location. I'm like, in the middle of this junker? Okay.
I'd sooner believe that this bitch can cast levitate on herself than she could use a helicopter. So they shake hands, waited by the boat long time, want something for it, so it's this, jars and guns, guns and jars.
Don't really understand that.
That's when Rick goes, are you fucking with me? With your crazy talks?
You crazy silly talks? Your punk girl bangs?
We take, we don't bother. Well, it kind of bothers me that you take my shit. Does that count?
I do actually like that phrase, though, but I like I was trying to say earlier, like, I feel like it's their philosophy of, we're not going to put out any more effort than we have to. Like, if we can have a mediary get it for us better, if we can sneak into somewhere in the night and not have to, you know, if we can be burglars in the night and never ever be seen, that's the best case scenario for them. Like, they want no interaction with outsiders is what it seems like to me. That's like the only way I can interpret this little, like, philosophical motto they have. I don't know what you'd call it.
So he learns about Winslow. He asks why they were going to do with Gabriel. She doesn't even say. She just lets them go. We have a deal, Rick reports. And then, can someone just fucking... I wanted a piece of trash to fall on Rosita's head here. And just like, that'd be the end of her.
She's losing me, man. Oh, man. Pretty fucking insufferable.
Right? So here's another kind of meta thing. Don't you think Rick would pull her aside at some point and go, Rosita, what's going on?
Why are you being such a fucking asshole lately? What's your deal?
Hey, can you do me a favor and not be a huge dickhole?
A big spummy dickhole about every fucking single goddamn thing we do? Could you try that?
Give it a
whirl,
will
you? Got my fucking hand impaled on Pinhead. What'd you fucking do?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ezekiel visits it's Carol. They bring her some cobbler. They leave. There's a knock on the door. It's Daryl. Why don't you talk about this?
I like it.
It's an emotional and tearful hug. I thought this was good work here. I thought this was good acting. I think Melissa McBride owns this moment. I think she's really good still.
She's so
despite
good,
my annoyance with the Kara character, Melissa McBride is still awesome. No question.
And I totally buy Lock, Stock, and Barrel, the whole dynamic between her and Daryl. Like, I believe it. These characters have some of the longest history between, you know, their own dynamic than just about any other characters at this point.
Yeah.
And I believe this amount of affection and, you know, willingness to go so far to look after this person.
Sure. We do get a quick look back on the trash pile, which I think is important, because Gabriel explains what happened. He says, one of them jumped me. She didn't get the supplies from the boat after all the waiting. They made me pack everything else. But she said they were at the boat, so I just hoped. So he did write boat.
Yeah.
Rick says, you got us here. I was beginning to lose faith, Gabriel says, but then I saw you and you nodded at me. The fact that you knew I didn't just leave. We will set things right, but things are going to be very hard first. I like all this stuff. I think this is really good reflection out of Gabriel. I can sense growth. I told you when this man entered this TV show that Seth Gilliam is a good actor. And I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to do something with Father G, and they have. And now he's here, and he's great. And Rick says, I knew enemies could become friends. And he's citing their relationship as to where it was and where it is. And I think this, it's no secret that my interest in this TV show has a lot to do with these types of characters, these types of growth arcs, this type of subtlety. And that's why I really like Father G. I like that we saw what he went through and the things that he had to deal with and where he is now. He's interesting. He's compelling. He's a good character.
He totally is, man.
There's stuff going on with him, you know?
If you had, like, and we've talked about this before, of like, if I had to drill down, if somebody asked me, like, why do you keep watching this show? Like, oh, fucking Walking Dead sucks. Why do you keep watching The Walking Dead? Because I remember Father G fucking going out in the road halfway, you know, half-assedly trying to kill himself and ended up having to actually fight a few zombies and survived it and was laying in the road. Like, it was a thing that was pathetic. It was pathetic to see and watch, but that matters now. Like, it's okay for a character to be fucking disgustingly pathetic if something interesting rises out of that. It's something beyond. And the fact that he, you know, has risen to where he is and is willing to put stock in the loyalty between him and Rick, and, you know, have faith that, all right, I have done right by them. They'll do right by me. I'm just going to hold strong and hope that, you know, they come and this relationship in a way pays off. And it did. Like, he's come such a long way, and I think some people might go, well, it's taken too long. It's been too boring between, but I think it's a realistic amount of time. You can't say it was rushed. Like, it took a long time for him to grow from a complete sniveling, sweaty little coward into a fucking man.
Right. Do you want to talk a little bit about this stuff? I know we just kind of blazed through Rosita and we were pretty just brutal. Do we want to talk about this stuff going on between her and Tara, and Tara sort of letting her have it and them getting into it a little bit here? I think there's some dialogue here worth talking about.
Yeah, let's dig into it.
Specifically, Rosita saying... first of all, Tara's just saying, we're going to stick together, blah, blah, blah. That's just the way it's going to go. And that's when Rosita says, I'm going to go on my own. And Tara says, we're sticking together. That's it. Blah, blah, blah. They fight. But she says, and then here's what Rosita says. It's always a fight, Tara. I'm not letting other people slow us down. If we get to stop people from taking from us, or we got to take from other people, I don't care. We win. Grow up. So this is a pretty tough outlook to take on your position, right?
Oh, it's a fucking stupid outlook to take.
In my opinion, this is a sort of a regression, but we've seen a lot of characters come to this type of crossroads at some point, right?
Totally.
You kill or you die, which is what the governor said, right? This is precisely what the governor thought at one point. This is kind of what Rick thought at one point, which is, we ain't fucking around anymore. We're going to take shit that we need to take. I mean, even Rick said, if these people don't let, and we let him have it, we did. He's like, these Alexander people are going to let us in, or we're going to fucking take shit, right? It's sort of where Rosita is starting to come now that she's faced this loss, which is, we're going to take shit, or whatever we're going to do, we're going to fucking win. That's it. We're winning. That's my point here. I want to win. I can sort of understand that, the you know, the shitty attitude surrounding it is different. But I understand that sort of stance that she's playing, because we've seen this happen to characters in the past. And Tara sort of trying to dress her down and saying, that's not how this is going to work. Take me through some of your thoughts here, Matt.
Well, the thing that stands out the most to me, that bugs me, is the whole, well, I'll go off on my own aspect. I'm like, that is such just even a dumb thing to say. Like,
that's Daryl, right? That's the Daryl move.
Yeah. But the mission that they're talking about isn't even just like, all right, let's go scout recon for this area, but let's stick together. And she's like, fuck it, I'll go off my own. In a way, you could still say that's, you could say that's being impetuous, but it could make some strategic sense to be on your own. But the mission here is to go off and gather up as many guns as we could possibly carry and somehow ship them back home to get to these people. You literally can't do that shit on your own. Like, you can't. What are you talking about? What a stupid thing to even say. You're just being a brat. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
But this is Richard, right? This is our Richard. This is Rick's Richard. This is somebody who wants to strike now and doesn't want to wait anymore. So we're seeing this unfold in both groups. We're seeing, you know, Richard being impetuous. I want to do this now. I don't want to wait. We're seeing Rosita. I don't want to wait. I don't want to go back. I want to do this now. Now's the fucking time. I don't want to wait anymore. And it's this impetuous nature of these people, which I can only imagine Rosita's feeling like she needs to whatever she's feeling inside her. First of all, I can't imagine watching my lover get his head dove in. But whatever causes that feeling in her, whatever urgency that's giving her, she's trying to satiate it in the only way she really knows how.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree. I mean,
if I want to be a bleeding liberal fucking cunt and try to reason with her a little bit, that's sort of what I'm going to do here.
I mean, that's 100% what's going on. Like, it is her not having, it's basically being like, I fucking want to get justice, get vengeance for this. And everybody's, everybody is telling you, no, you got to wait. And with totally good reason, you do have to wait. But it's just, I mean, imagine that situation of like, sure. No, I got to see my fucking lover, my fiance, my wife or husband's fucking be murdered right in front of me. And you're telling me, no, I can't go and like get vengeance, get justice. Or, you know, that person just gets to go off gallivanting free and happy. Like, that would drive anybody crazy, but she does have to, somebody has to have that hard talking to her of like, you know,
it basically needs to be
Lord Humongous to his fucking sword, like, you will get your revenge. You just have to wait. Like,
right.
We'll get there. We will get
just
there.
Just like, walk away. They need to, she needs to have a sit down. And if you can't appeal to her because people are banged up and people want food, then you need to appeal to her and say, you're not going to do anybody any good by going off and dying. And because that's what's going to happen. Then you trip her to the floor.
You're not going to avenge anything.
You trip her to the floor, show her how much you can easily overpower her, and you slowly choke the life out of her. And as she starts to fade into unconsciousness, you say, this is going to happen to you. This is going to happen to you. Then you let her back up, and she learns her lesson, right?
There we go.
The fucking Al Swearingen school of toughening up your broads. Jesus Christ.
Oh, fuck.
That is. That's the Al Swearingen way.
It's fully endorsed by the NFL.
That's
hey, if I have to have a TBI, so should my girlfriend. That's all I'm fucking saying.
Yeah, but you win fucking championships.
You got 5 frames, dude.
Well, yeah.
Well,
you got a couple of touchdowns. That's what that guy did. No championships for him yet. Maybe if he chokes a few more, he'll get one. I don't know.
Woof.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's get back to it.
Concluded.
Yeah, my 50 shades, Maria says. I'd choke you a little lighter than that. That was a life lesson I was trying to teach Rosita. That's different. The other one's just more like, you know, playful strangulation. Anyway, Tara's like, step up. Fucker. So that was my imitation of her. Grow up. That's so dismissive and reductive. Ugh.
Yeah, no, I do hate
things
that.
Like grow up or whatever.
Whatever. Roll my eyes. Walk away.
Well, just walk away. So yeah. That's my humongous voice. It's pretty good.
You will have your vengeance, my dog of war.
I swear I will let you chase him down with your assless chaps. Soon enough. But not yet. Let's actually talk about the show again. So we go back to the Carol and Daryl. So the final scenes here, the Carol and Daryl, and then we get the Morgan, Shiva, and Daryl stuff. So we kind of already briefly talked about it. It's, you know, it's yeah.
This is an interesting scene in the sense that there's really no new information here. Like, there's no revelation from either of them. Nope. This is, as far as us, the audience, are concerned, this is super old news as far as Carol's strange roundabout way of, and I'll admit, I feel like I understand it a little bit better now. I still don't like it or agree with it, but I get this idea of, like, I know myself well enough to be like, I can't resist, you know, fighting back hard against not even just my loved ones being killed, but like even them being in danger will push me to this like really extreme place where like I will go, you know, I'll cook six people in a human sized oven to kill them. Like, you know, I'll do awful things where I feel like, you know, it's destroying me. You know, I'm like, okay, like I get this idea, and where she's like, the only way for me to recoup my, you know, humanity is to be away from anyone and be alone and not, you know, only have to look out for myself. I'm like, yeah, okay.
The way you connect with humanity is you isolate yourself from all humans.
Yeah, there you go.
That's usually what's prescribed. You want to get
it worked for Into the Wild. Yeah. I mean, hey.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's a success story. I don't know what you got. I don't know what book you guys read.
Cool. I died on a bus alone. I fucking really connected with humanity. Jesus Christ. Sure. Okay. You say so. I really found myself out here in the fucking frozen tundra.
Into the Wild. New York Times review says, cool, I died on a bus alone.
I do have a way of manner of speech. I apologize. But yeah, I mean, all joking aside, I think that Melissa McBride is great here as she tries to sum up the will to ask, did anyone get hurt? Is everyone okay? Did the saviors? Yeah. And then she breaks up. This moment out of her is fantastic because there's a lot going on. There's A, yeah, do I want to know? There's B, am I going to kind of feel responsible that I wasn't there to help? C, do I feel a bit of a coward? Do I feel like I betrayed or abandoned my friends? I mean, there's a lot of emotions going on in Carol in this particular moment. And I just think Melissa McBride crushes this.
Yeah. And I think in this scene, like we've seen her, it's always usually been between her and Morgan of this whole, like, this is why I'm choosing to do this. I'm leaving because of this. And like this very like combative, you know, proposal that she always normally gives it in of like, I have to leave because I, you know, of all these things and you can't stop me. And the way she gives it here to Daryl is for one, a lot more heartfelt and quieter. She's just trying to be honest about how she feels. But at the same time, it's also, I feel like you can even see a tinge of this is seeming like bullshit coming out of my mouth with her of like, this me saying it out loud to Daryl makes it seem stupid. Like it makes it seem shaky and illegitimate in a way. I totally agree with just, you know, your whole assessment of her having to muster up the nerve because she, and I almost, there's a part of me that wonders, like, you must know you've been lied to. Like, come on. Like, you know, things were going to go really bad.
Not just that, but I also think there's part of me that thinks that she's terrified in addition to all of this, all of these other complex emotions possibly running through her head here. I feel like she's terrified that he's going to say yes and that she knows that her humanity is now gone.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
It's time for Sarah Connor Carol.
That's it.
Right? And I think she's terrified he's going to say yes here. And whenever he doesn't, and then they eat fucking porridge or whatever they eat, and, you know, they talk a little bit about Ezekiel. I one thing I like here, it's very subtle, but I like how Daryl asks of Ezekiel because she trusts Carol's opinion of him.
Exactly. I love that too. Because this goes right back. This is a, you know, a really consistent thing about Daryl's character of like, I feel like he's not the most intelligent character. And I don't think that's an unfair thing to say. And I think he's aware of that about himself. And he knows he probably doesn't have the best read of people's, you know, guiles and agendas. But I think he does have a good sense for who he can personally trust. And that's why, I mean, sure. I think he wants to come to her and be like, What do you think of him? Like, because like I maybe he does kind of want to trust Ezekiel, but he's not going to let himself do that until it's been like validated by somebody he already cares about and trusts.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good.
So we move over to him going to spend some time with the old tiger.
It's like dang, it's the only thing that gets me, man. Fucking wild animal.
He's lucky it gets him because it could reach through and pull his face off.
Right? Just like a baboon on any given day.
But cool scene. I like the stuff with Morgan. He says Ezekiel will be impressed. I like how he's like, well, I figure any guy that has a pet tiger can't be that bad. Of course not, because you're a hick. You would, of course, say that. He's okay by Carol, right? That comes right back up again. And Morgan tries to say, look, what I said. What was your take on all this?
Wait, hold on. Which scene here? I think I just got lost.
The scene at the end where with the tiger. Which Morgan, Morgan. You fucking paying attention, son?
Yeah, no, I've lost track of the dialogue in the scene. I was like, wait a minute. But no, I like Morgan basically intuiting that, no, you didn't say anything. Like, if you had, she'd already be. She would have accompanied you back here. The fact that you're here alone kind of says it all for him.
It does, for sure. And I just like this. Morgan does annoy me at times, but he's a great actor. I like him a lot.
Oh, totally good.
It's cool to see these guys connecting. It's cool to see Daryl saying we need the kingdom and you got to make that happen. Yeah, it's funny that like that was Daryl's mission that he then gave to Morgan.
Well, cause I think, you know, we talked about this in the last episode of how, like, I thought for one, it could be interesting that kind of mission was given to Daryl since he's really not the guy for it. But in a way, I almost think it's even better that Daryl realizes he's not the guy for it. And he's like, no, you got to do this. You got to be the one, you know, there are a couple connecting threads here that, you know, Carol is still close by. And I think Carol also trusts Morgan pretty well at this point, even though there's a little more distance between them, as far as their relationship goes. But it's like Morgan is kind of this intermediary between Ezekiel and Carol at this point. And I think if nothing else, Daryl can he can't formulate it, but he can recognize it and be like, this is your job. Like, I can't do it. I can't navigate these weird fucking like ambassador like political inroads to convince somebody to go to war.
Yeah, good shit. I like it a lot. That's sort of how this thing wraps up, right? Anything else you want to say? Other than Daryl goes back to Hilltop, we do see him. So he leaves. He's exposing himself.
Yeah, which, I mean, fuck, kind of a dumb move there. I couldn't help but think that. You know, I was like, the Saviors kick the doors open on the Hilltop and just root through their shit on a regular basis. Like, you are really going to have to hide if that's where you end up.
Morgan and Richard share a look, and that's it. Daryl walks kind of oddly out the door, and the door slams closed, and we roll credits. Right? There's no scenes after that. That's it. It's over. Done, bitch. What do you say we queue up a couple listener comments? You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right, baby. Let's queue them up, motherfuckers. We take comments, don't we, Matt? Sometimes we read some, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we read a bunch, sometimes we read very few. Sometimes we just skip it and we go right to final thoughts. Depends how we're feeling that day. We're not really consistent with that. I mean, we have been, but we've been a little inconsistent as of late because we're very whimsical. We're whimsical little fairies.
I chase my whimsy.
So we had a lot of responses to this episode on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/groups/LSG on TWD. You can find us if you just search. That's groups/LSG on TWD. Now you can also email us hosts@libertystreetgeek.net if you have some thoughts you want to give over to us. And you can be preemptive. You don't have to wait for me to, you know, put it up there after you watch it. If you have some thoughts, you can send us an email, which is exactly what happened today. So I know we definitely have an email on this particular episode. I don't know if you saw that, Matt. I actually gave it to you. But if you don't have it, I can go ahead and read it because I thought it was a really well thought out email. So
I've got my Facebook ones lined up, but I don't have the email pulled up. So
all right, I will do that one. So Tim Lamb emailed us. Thanks for the email. Timmy says, okay, I knew Father G was not turning tail, but I guess my earlier prediction that he was stashing weapons must be wrong. I'm glad Rick and the gang found some allies, but I'm concerned that they're hoping the staff of Hot Topic will be of much assistance. I guess the countdown is running on when Tara will spill the beans on that all-female community, or as she calls it, heaven, so they can get some weapons. That's a good point, right? That did come up.
Oh, it did. Yeah, no, it definitely did.
Tim Lamb continues by saying, but gentlemen, I need you to explain the whole boat community thing to me. So the guy who owned the boat and the supplies maybe did die, but the roadshow company of Lost Boys did not take his stuff because they don't steal, or do they? Or they waited for someone else to take it so they could then steal it from that group? Lots of questions. And finally, Daryl, yeah, I'm not telling Carol what happened to Glenn Abraham and the others. That'll turn out so well when Carol inevitably finds out the truth. Still love the show, but some plot holes seem to be skirting close to a CW show now. So Matt's faithful, but he has some doubts and he has some good questions. So
Matt,
I think we should have... Tim, excuse me. Matt as well. Just different types. I think we should talk about Tim's observations here, specifically the boat thing. So yeah, my impression was the boat guy died. They were waiting or something. And then Rick took their stuff. They tracked Rick back and took it from him. I mean, I guess that's
how it
ended
up being Morgan as the person, whatever person of theirs was trying to sneak in, ran into Morgan inside of the wow.
So here they are lying wait at this shitty boathouse where one, two guys at the most live. Right? Carl Weathers, Predator. And then when he dies and they don't get his shit, they decide to assail a much harder to reach place that has walls and guard towers and steal it from them. Like it's really dicey. It's really a little weird to me. He's got a good point here.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Do you have any explanation for any of this?
I mean, yeah, like I was saying earlier, it's like their whole idea of why have any of us expend the effort when we can wait for somebody else to do it, and then I guess fucking highway rob them. But yeah, and I guess maybe, you know, this it's a whole fucking cult of rogues. This is all like fucking rogues that work, you know, they have a collective little community here, but then I guess they all go out individually to like sneak off into the shadows of the night and steal shit, you know, very quietly without much, you know, fighting involved.
Right.
I suppose if I'm fucking stretching to make this make sense.
Yeah, maybe they're just maybe that's their thing. Maybe they're thieves. They're not fighters, right?
I think that's more what it is. Which is again where I'm like, really? They're gonna fight your war? Okay.
Yeah, but that's Rick going, go out, go ahead, yeah, go ahead, man, keep going, yeah. Right down there.
Like we got you. We got artillery back.
Like the end of Goodfellas. Go ahead, right down there, yeah, right in that building. Go ahead.
Then they see the plastic on the floor.
Get fucking whacked out. But anyway. So yeah, that's that. Yeah. Good stuff from Tim. I really appreciate it. Matthew, definitely. What do you got?
I have a comment from Mr. David Earl. And he said, I enjoyed the scavengers simply because they are different. I hope they have badass Mad Max vehicles. The trash heap could be a great place to fight the saviors. I liked that a lot. Gabriel was a bit of both, this Father McGee tonight. Looking forward to seeing how the miscreants will deal with the Rictatorship trying to take their guns. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season. Oh, and Eugene would love the mullet mania that exists with the scavengers. But awesome. That one thing that David Earl brought up, I love the idea of them taking control of like the setting of the battle and like pulling them into a fucking trap ambush inside the junkyard. That's kind of cool. I kind of like that.
Mm, yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, you could definitely, if you knew people were coming into that junkyard, you could really funnel them into a fucking avalanche type of death with fucking car engines and shit.
The Hot Canyon.
Nice. The Hot Gates.
Hot Gates.
Floyd Fry says, I'm ready for there to be a little bit of a backlash to the backlash of the hating on TWD. The past three or four eps have been entertaining, introduced new characters, and moved the story along. I mean, this is a TV show about zombies. I think some fans, he says in quotation marks, ooh, how pretentious of you, Floyd, are just expecting too much from this show at this point. Mm-hmm. I wanted to read this because I think Floyd has a bit of a good point here, which is essentially that if you can, if you can kind of see these apps for what they are, if you still consider yourself, and I think that's, we touched on this last week. I'm going to get to my point instead of stammering around it. And that's this. I think you have to look in the mirror and say, am I a Walking Dead fan or not?
Yeah.
And if you're going to say no, then you're watching it and you're wasting your time. Or you're saying, no, I'm not, to insulate yourself from the fact that you're disappointed in it and you're watching it and just being hopeful.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, right? Like, I definitely still consider myself a Walking Dead fan. That doesn't mean that it's not recently been paddled and grounded by me, but it's been, these last couple episodes have been pretty decent to me.
Yeah.
They've introduced different things, and that's what I like about it. There's something different going on here. And I think a lot of this is spearheaded by Rick's behavior. Instead of just demanding things because he feels like he's so capable and so deadly, he has to talk and use different strategies and change up his approach. And he just, fucking Andrew Lincoln, man, he's the best part of the show. He's got to be, right?
He's up there, man.
He's got to be.
I still really enjoy him.
Anyway, who do you got?
Well, I think it's a perfect follow-up to that comment because, one, I'll say I'm pretty much there with you, Floyd. But from Mr. Sam Spade, I hate the trash people. I have liked Pollyanna McIntosh and some indie horror, but this is just stupid. I hate these people. When the hell did they decide to capture an Arma Walker and keep it for random pit fights? Thanks to the writers, now I'm expecting Lord Humongous, the damn Necromongers, or hell, those dudes from Dark City now. I hate these people. I can't believe Rick and them will ever mount a successful attack if none of these people can ever stop having their own agendas and doing dumb shit long enough to be productive. Ugh, I'm hating so many people, except Ezekiel. I'll never be that fucking cool.
There you go. Yeah, there's a lot of annoyances with these people, and I definitely am... You know, like the way they talk, the meta aspect of not even asking them that. But I think that's one of those suspension of disbeliefs. And I don't even know if they keep him there to do what they did. I think it was just coincidental that he was down there and they're like, all right, bitch, let's see how tough you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Do you think they put people through trials routinely?
You know, you would think if they invested that much of a fucking, like, we welded a special cap for our zombie Winslow boy. But also, there's a part of me that
maybe
thinks
they
must...
didn't, though.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
like we're assuming a lot about Winslow.
Totally. Well, and also, I mean, I think we know they are so strange in a cult-like sense, and we know nothing of their, like, culture or rituals. Maybe this is just what they do to their people when they die. Like, they fucking make them this, like, hell beast unbeatable zombies. Like, that's just something they do. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay. I like it.
I mean, the fact that she was like, that's not a monster, that's Winslow. Like, it was so casual to her. That was like, is that just what they do when somebody dies? Like, all right, we're going to turn you, you are dead now, and we're going to stab knives through your body and put a fucking skull cap of knives on you because that's what we do.
Right. Right. Weird. Right on. All right, cool. Do you have anybody else you want to do?
Let me see. You know what? I do have one more from Mr. Tory Hunter. Gavin stole the show this week for me. The Saviors have mostly been portrayed as a bunch of savages. The reluctance to be in conflict with Ezekiel and company was palpable. Read the goddamn room, Simsei. I like that. I guess they are going to have to bludgeon Morgan's Padawan with the cheesemaker's stick for him to drop his passivity. I liked Richard until this episode. Attempting to scapegoat a lone woman with the Savior's wrath? For what? And when Rosita is on the TV, I want to bludgeon the screen with Tara's head until they both just go away. I'm mostly with you on this, Tori, but I still like Tara. I mean, I have a soft spot for Tara.
Yeah, Tori routinely makes really good points and highlights things that I think are important to talk about, and this is no exception.
Totally.
So good post by Tori, of course. Let's do final thoughts, Matt. What do you say?
Final thoughts, yes.
I'll go and I'll let you wrap because I don't have a ton more to say other than this is a tale of two things going on to me. There is the clinical look at this episode, and then there's the I'm watching a comic book TV show part of me, and they sort of are at war. Not really. That's, again, being hyperbolic. But when I watch it, the bad is the way they talk, the way nobody addresses it, certain things like this, you know, weird character moments, Rosita having a tantrum, Tara sort of stepping on her, but maybe Rick should step in. You know, Richard's behavior being a little off and trying to wrap my head around it. and then you know, different things like this, that those things annoy me. But what I like is all of those same things, just looking at them in a different perspective, which is, I like the idea that Richard's resorting to some sort of underhanded behavior to do what he has to do. And I like that to be fleshed out a little more. I like this new group that's a little weird, nothing we've encountered before. What's their angle? What do they want? Can they be trusted? Do they have any skills? They fucking infiltrated into Alexandria. That means something. I mean, if they could get close to your boy and get over the fence and into the pantry with nobody being the wiser, then they might have some skills here. Why do they talk like fucking weirdos? I don't know. I saw a couple explanations in chat about maybe it's some sort of proto language where they're, proto is not the right word. Maybe it's some sort of agreed upon language because maybe members of this group don't speak English and they needed like, some sort of simple tongue, right?
It's like thieves can't, some weird shit.
Nice. Look at you, you nerd.
And I knew you'd appreciate that.
And in yeah, that's so I could kind of look at the good and the bad, I could look at the things that make it good and bad as being the same things. But overall, I like it. I mean, if I want to step back and look at The Walking Dead, I was looking forward to watching it this week. I watched it last week. I was like, oh, it's back. I don't fucking care. I watched it. I enjoyed it. I watched it this week, waiting to watch it. It was enjoyable. I liked it. I'm not completely sold on Carol's explanation of just losing her humanity. But I guess if you literally feel like you're losing your sanity and you need to isolate yourself, then maybe that's what you do. I don't fucking know. I ain't a doctor. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's my love of The Walking Dead has not, I think the best parts of The Walking Dead are behind it for me personally. But I'm still watching it and doing the show and having fun talking about it. I definitely have more fun analyzing and talking about it than I do watching it. That's all I got. Go, bitch.
Well, I don't have too much else to say about like you. I did want to focus a little bit more, but I feel like I didn't talk about enough earlier on that scene, the last scene between Daryl and Carol. I think it's a really, really interesting choice to have Daryl lie there. And that could be seen as outside of his character. I see it as more just a little bit of a stretch for his character, a believable one. And it's in that moment of her having to muster up the courage to ask him, you know, what are the consequences of, you know, of my leaving and of the Savior's coming? Like, how bad is it? How much have we suffered? It's him deciding to lie is not just him sparing her pain. I think that would be a very simplistic read of it, of just like, oh, well, he's just like a fucking friend-zoned guy who wants to spare his lover pain. That may be a part of the mixture.
Right.
What I really liked about it is that all before she actually asks him that question is her stating in kind of uncertain terms, but still stating, why did I leave? Why am I out here? Why do I want to be alone? And she's still, like I was saying earlier, I feel like this is the least confident she's ever laid out her mindset, you know, having to lay it out to Daryl. But she lays it all out to him, and he, I think, really just wants to respect her choice for her own life, for herself. He respects her wishes. He respects her as a person, and he knows that telling her what actually happened is going to draw her back into the fray, and that is not what she wants. She thinks that she, for her own fucking, you know, health and humanity, and to just be a decent human being, needs to be alone for now. And I think that's why he does it. I think it's a much more out of respect, and I think it's a bit of a deeper, more nuanced choice than just sparing somebody the pain of, oh, our sweet brother Glenn took the bat. Oh, like I think it's more meaningful than that, and I really liked that choice. Otherwise, yeah. Man, I'm intrigued. I'm on the side of the people who like these garbage pail kids. I kind of like to see where this is going to go. I think it's strange. I think it's interesting. I think this is a total war makes for strange bedfellows, and this could bite us all in the ass really hard later on, and we might be having to go up against the fucking newly empowered, emboldened garbage people as future enemies. But I like the messiness of the alliance making. I think that is cool and even realistic in certain ways. It's just, the lines are getting blurred, and you need allies out of necessity more than out of, you know, oh, I like them because they are good people and have good principles. Like, they have a lot of guns, and we need that right now. So I like it, man. I'm still on board for this.
Cool, brother. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, man. That was a lot of fun to talk about. Again, lots of good thoughts. Thanks to the people who wrote in and chimed in on Facebook. Thanks for joining us in the live chat. Don't forget to visit us on the web at LibertyStreetGeek.net. I'm Dean. That's Matthew. We're getting the fuck out of here. Until next week. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out LibertyStreetGeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.